Hey everyone, and welcome to At the Letters for June 10th, 2025. Ben Nicholson-Smith here with you. Arden Zwelling is on the other end of the line, and Christian Ryan is producing this episode of ATL to discuss the 36 and 30 Toronto Blue Jays in playoff position, winners of four series in a row. They are doing very well, playing some very good baseball. But Arden, first, let's check in on you. How are you doing?
I wish I could say I was doing as well, but I'm here.
Yeah, they are doing really well. If you were doing personally as well as the Toronto Blue Jays were, that would be great because they are playing really their best baseball of the season. It's kind of weird because from a podcasting standpoint, to go a little meta for a second, this actually might be kind of ideal because they're playing amazing. The vibes are great. They have some really great performances that we're going to discuss in the course of this episode. And simultaneous to that, there are some major issues here, like major, major issues, fundamental, structural, that we have to discuss as well. So there's a lot to get to, but this team right now, despite these issues, they're playing such good baseball.
Yeah, I mean, everything is going their way for, every bullpen decision. And look, Monday night notwithstanding, but I think that very seldom has John Schneider made one of those 55-45 gray area decisions and had it blow up in his face. Every bullpen day that they deploy, everything goes great. George Springer at 35 looks like George Springer at 25. Alejandro Kirk's like one of the best catchers in the league. They're getting down lineup production. The bullpen's been exceptional. They've had three starting pitchers for like a month and it hasn't buried them in the standings. They've been relatively fortunate on the health front. Like obviously they have important guys on the IL, but I think that comparatively to other teams around the league, the Blue Jays have generally been pretty healthy. They're outperforming their Pythagorean. They're winning more one-run games than they're losing. They've won 36 times and 20 of those have involved overcoming deficits. For the last few years, we've talked about how for the Blue Jays, maddeningly, the whole has been less than the sum of the parts. And suddenly in 2025, the whole is more than the sum of the parts when you look at the Blue Jays on paper and then considering how they're performing in reality.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, even you look at the record in extra innings, they're 5-2. So extra innings, I mean, it's kind of really is coin flip territory in a lot of ways, but they have been able to come through. And you look at, you know, Kirk front and center in that. He has just been incredible. He was the one who drove in the game winning run against the Cardinals on Monday night.
Or you can do this to left field and it's off the base of the wall. Barger is around third. He will score. It's an RBI double for Kirk. His fourth.
He has had all kinds of success when you look at the late and close, the eighth inning on, the runners in scoring position, the two strikes. You can break it down basically however you want. And he's producing offensively for the season. Kirk is hitting .316 with an OPS approaching 800. And his catching metrics are just literally the best that you can find, from throwing to framing to blocking. He is just having an amazing year. And I mean, you said it in one of your earlier comments there, one of the best catchers in baseball. I don't even feel like that's an exaggeration anymore. Like, I feel like he just is one of the better catchers in this game at this point, the way he's playing.
Yeah, it's a real testament to David Popkins and Lou Iannotti and Hunter Mentz and everyone else behind the scenes in an analyst role and a research role who contributes to the Blue Jays hitting group. I remember when David Popkins took the Blue Jays hitting coach job this past off season, and you know, one of the first things that he said behind the scenes was Alejandro Kirk is one of the guys I am most excited to work with because there is so much untapped potential there. When you look at the contact ability, the balance that he has just athletically in the box, you look at the swing plane and you look at the swing decisions and you look at the sneaky pop that's in there, I think that Popkins et al. Just saw a ton of untapped potential that hadn't been realized over the last couple of years for one reason or another. And they've clearly done a lot of work with Kirk, and it can be kind of hard to identify some of the things he's doing differently because he is a man of so few words and he doesn't really let you in on exactly what he's experiencing physically or emotionally in the box. You know, he's just very, very steady, which is a good thing and a real benefit and a reason why he's as good as he is at what he does. But I think that just subjectively, you can see that he looks different in the box. There's some changes to the stance. There's some changes just to the movements in his swing. And then also, I think objectively, you look at the fact that he has the third highest increase in hard hit rate from 24 to 25 of any hitter in this league. He's, you know, top five since the beginning of May in hard hit balls. So that's 95 mile per hour plus exit velo. And he's a catcher, so he doesn't play every day. And he's still top five up there with Ohtani and Judge and Guerrero and Bichette. Clearly a ton of work has gone on with him behind the scenes, and you're really seeing the results right now.
Yeah, and yet, by the numbers, Tyler Heineman has more WAR, higher batting average. Tyler Heineman, shockingly, and I mean, you know, Tyler Heineman. This
Tyler Heineman does not have more WAR than Alejandro Kirk.
He does.
No shot. There's no way.
I'm looking at it right now, Arden. 1.54 for Tyler Heineman. Yep.
What?
Alejandro Kirk has 1.3. Well, and look, this is where...
Okay, wait. You're looking at Baseball Reference.
I am looking at Baseball Reference.
All right. Yes. So Kirk on Fangraphs has 2.2. Heineman's not even qualified. I got to open it. And Heineman has 1.5. I think that's... I'm going to take that WAR over the... I'm sorry, man. Tyler Heineman in 22 games and 59 plate appearances just has not been more valuable than Alejandro Kirk in 53 games and 208 plate appearances. I disagree wholeheartedly with that Baseball Reference WAR.
I forget if I told you this, but I was sitting in the press box, I want to say a month ago, beside Blake Murphy and David Singh, and we were talking, we basically invented a stat called common sense WAR, where it's like when the WAR just doesn't make sense, you have to reject it. And so along with Fangraphs WAR and Baseball Reference WAR, I think by common sense WAR, it's very clear that Alejandro Kirk is a better player than Tyler Heineman.
Thank you. I needed you to say that. Thank you.
Oh, well, obviously. It's not even close.
To center and deep. And it's gone! It looked like Scott got a glove on it and might have actually helped it get over the wall.
The assist. It's off the glove.
And beyond that, he's a better player. He has added more value to the Toronto Blue Jays in 2025 than Tyler Heineman.
Yes.
It's not close. And everyone with the Blue Jays would tell you that. It's a fact. So WAR, you know, in this tiny instance, WAR is letting us down. WAR is a great stat. The point being, Alejandro Kirk, I think in contrast to Tyler Heineman, is actually doing stuff that's mostly sustainable. I mean, I don't think he's going to hit 316 all year, but I do think he's going to be one of the best defensive catchers in the sport. I do think he's going to strike out approximately as often as he walks and probably hit a lot of singles and a lot of doubles and sprinkle in a few home runs. And that's a really, really good player.
Yeah, I don't think that he's going to continue the performance with two strikes. He has been far and away the best hitter of two strikes in baseball. And like I said, it's a credit to his heart rate and to how calm he is and poised and just the metal he has in the box. It's kind of funny. He's a guy who oft gets criticized for not being demonstrative enough and not being emotional enough and not being assertive enough, right? And not sort of displaying those outward gesticulations that tell you that he cares. But it's like, this is actually the guy's superpower, is that he's just completely composed and just completely flatlined in like all scenarios, whether things are going well or whether things are going poorly. That's actually a good thing and really benefits him at the plate, that low heart rate. So I think that's why he's done well with two strikes. But I mean, it's unsustainable what he's doing with two strikes. It's not going to continue at the rate that it has been. And that's okay because if his performance with two strikes is diminished considerably, it's still going to be really strong. Like, that's just how good it's been. You look at the batting average and balls in play at 333 for him this year. That's going to come down, particularly considering his foot speed. I would expect him to have an average for his career in terms of batting average on balls in play that is below 300, probably well below, honestly. Like, I would expect him in the like 280 range just because he doesn't have the same foot speed. So clearly he's been lucky and clearly he's benefited from things going his way on balls in play. But look, when you're a player who doesn't strike out very much and makes a ton of contact and puts the ball in play at a really high rate of speed really consistently, you get that luck, because the harder you hit the ball, the harder it is for the defense to make plays on it, the more often it finds gaps or gets overheads, or just like, you know, when you hit it on a line really hard, it'll just fall in front, you know, go right over the infield and fall in front of outfielders a lot. So yeah, the production is going to regress, but even if it does, it's still going to be well, well, well above average for a catcher.
Yeah, and in some ways that's kind of true of the team, where you look at, all right, they've probably been a little lucky this year, and they're probably not going to continue to win 71% of their extra inning games or the amount of close games that they've been winning. But it doesn't matter. They've won 36 times. No one's taking those wins away. So now they have, what is it, 96 games remaining. If they win 50 of those, they're going to be an 86-win team. That seems pretty doable. Like, you look at the playoff odds right now, they are 56% to make the playoffs on FanGraphs as we record this before the Tuesday night game between Chris Bassitt and Miles Mikolas. So that's obviously really good. They started the season just over 40%. So they've improved their playoff odds. They've passed some teams. They're clearly, you know, second in the American League East right now, behind the Yankees when it comes to playoff likelihood. And again, we've said this many times and it bears repeating, that no one's here to award the Toronto Blue Jays a medal for making a wild card game. If that's what it comes down to, they need to have bigger goals than that. And they do have bigger goals than that. And they need to achieve them. End of the day, you know, wild card games, there need to be bigger achievements than that for this ball club. But step one, try to get there. And the way last year went, it was just in disarray by this point in the season. So for them to be six games over 500 in second place, pacing toward a potential playoff appearance, despite the issues that they have, this is actually a pretty impressive run that this team has been on.
Well, and this is what I've been arguing for a while, was they just need to get well clear of 500 so that when they lose four in a row, and they will lose four in a row, it's going to happen again this year, they're just dropping down to two games above 500, and then they can build back up from there. Yeah. You don't want that four in a row that you lose to knock you two games under 500 or three games under 500, and now you're back underwater. Like, now that they're above water, they want to stay above water. Like, if you just take the super macro perspective of this and you look at the fact that they've won at a 545 clip, just can like sustain this winning percentage over the rest of the season and they'll win 88 games and they'll be a wild card team. That's the 54% of it all, right? Shout out Jerry DePoto. Honestly, if you just win between 54 and 56% every year, you're going to be in the playoffs like 9 seasons out of 10 or 8 seasons out of 10. So as you said, wasn't the goal. They wrote on the walls in Dunedin, bringing championships back to Canada. They talked about winning World Series and raising flags, and they were not moving the goalposts at all. Like, they have fallen short of the goal that they stated coming into this competitive cycle. So what? We're here. We're here now. Yeah. If they just reach the postseason and get into a wild card series, they got a chip and a chair, and it's a lot easier to manage the fact that you only have three starting pitchers in the postseason than it is during the regular season.
Chip and a chair. Is that a poker thing?
Yes, chip and a chair.
Huh. Nice. Yeah, they got a chip and a chair. No question about that. And I think this is a ball club that does have the offense to potentially get there and to potentially continue scoring runs at a really reasonable clip here. And I want to touch on Jonathan Class A here, because this is someone who is from that depth cohort that we've talked a lot about this year, where Addison Barger has stepped up. Alan Roden has kind of, you know, attempted to, but hasn't happened. We can talk about Joey Loperfido or Elvis Martinez, Will Wagner, David Schneider. There's this group of younger position players, and I'll admit, Arden, and you know this because we chat about it via text, I haven't been very impressed with Jonathan Class A so far this year. I just haven't. It's not to write him off completely, but watching him, I haven't been very impressed. And then on Monday, he really impressed me. And it's one game, but it is kind of proof of concept of what this guy can do when you're talking about getting great jumps on balls in the outfield, dropping down a bunt to get a base hit with Nolan Arenado playing third base, and then hitting a game-tying home run in the ninth inning against Ryan Helsley.
Fly ball, high and deep, right center field, it's gone! Jonathan Class A has tied the game.
So to me, it was the most impressive game I've ever seen from him. More important, it was the most impressive game John Schneider has ever seen from him. What did you make of that performance from Class A?
Yeah, he had three balls in play at 95 plus. He had an absolutely perfect bunt to one of the best third base defenders ever, who made a tremendous play on it, and Class A still beat it out. The double play, the Bichette liner, obviously not a great play, but that's just completely bad baseball luck. And if you watch the high home angle of that, Jonathan Class A's jump is like perfect. Like, he would have had that base stolen easily. I mean, he, on the pitcher's very first flinch of a movement, Class A was off. So, like, give him credit for all of the above before we even get to the fact that, you know, he turns around Ryan Helsley on 98 with an 86 mile per hour bat speed, which is like incredible.
Wow.
Like, that is incredible bat speed, right? So he hits that ball 107 with 86 mile per hour bat speed off a 98 mile per hour pitch, which, like, yeah, it was all over the plate, but we see plenty of players get beat by 98 on the plate. Like, it's not, you know, it's still hard to turn that around and to hit it like 416 feet over the center field wall. Like, the guy is dripping with tools and he is dripping with potential. What he lacks is feel, and what he lacks is experience. You see that the most in the outfield, where the jumps really leave something to be desired, and some of the assertiveness isn't quite there. I think he's just still learning some of that, just the baseball feel, really, because he's 23 years old, man. Like, he's the youngest position player on the 40-man roster. He's the second youngest player on the 40-man roster. Angel Bastardo is younger than him, but I mean, right, he's on the 60-day.
And that's a Rule 5 pick. I mean, he's not, functionally, he's not a major leaguer at this point.
No. So, and Class A is the youngest position player on the 40. And, like, look, every night there is like a different highlight of, you know, Will Robertson's latest hot streak where he's barreling everything. Or here's RJ Schreck at AAA, or, you know, Yohendrick Pinongo, and, you know, Joey Loperfido. And, like, here's all these interesting outfield prospects. And, you know, they've got tools, and it's, you know, what could they one day be if the Blue Jays can, like, really just, like, bring them along and develop them? Well, Will Robertson's 27 and Joey Loperfido's 26 and RJ Schreck is 25. Jonathan Class A is 23, and he probably has more upside than any of them, and he's right in front of our eyes. So if the Blue Jays can help him realize his potential and get the most out of his tools, they might just have a Corbin Carroll light on their hands.
Wow, that's high praise. Yeah.
I said light.
No,
Corbin,
I heard
Corbin Carroll
you.
Light, though. But can you see it?
Yeah, I mean, look, he's got tools. I think that, I mean, it's undeniable that he hasn't really put it together when it comes to just the feel, as you were saying. And there's such a tempo to the game. A ball's hit to an outfielder. How long does it take before the outfielder throws it into the infield? We just have this kind of clock that we're used to seeing. And sometimes, like, Class A will hold onto the ball for like a half beat too long. And I'm just like, get it in, get it in. Or, you know, just little things like that where it doesn't actually cost you anything, but it just doesn't quite look normal for what you're expecting from major league outfielders. But he still has the speed. Like, I thought his closing speed on some of those shallow fly balls on Monday was really good in St. Louis, where I am right now covering the games for sportsnet.ca. So this is a player who I'm still torn, if I'm really being honest with you. Like, because look, if the Blue Jays were a rebuilding team, it would be very simple. You hold on to him, you give him playing time, and you see exactly what he can become for you in 2026 and beyond. That's obvious. Now, they're not a rebuilding team. They're 36-30 and trying to make the postseason. So what is the fit on a team that already has Santander, Lucas? You've already got, you know, George Springer, Varsho coming back pretty soon. Sounds like Varsho is actually making pretty good progress. And that injury that looked pretty bad at third base a couple weeks ago might not, in fact, be as bad as the Blue Jays had feared. So that's a really good thing for the Jays. But the fact is, Miles Straw, they have a lot of outfielders. So I'm a little torn as far as, do you see what happens here and play him on a bench role? Do you dangle him in trade talks and try to get someone who can really help you? Obviously, the immediate answer for the next 6-7 weeks is you just let things play out and assess your options. But it's an interesting conversation, I think.
Yeah, and he's still 23. So think about how often we said, wow, Addison Barger has all the tools. He just hasn't put it all together. It takes time. Like, not everybody is going to hit the majors in their early 20s and be Ronald Acuña Jr. Like, that's the exception to the rule. Most guys need a taste of the majors, and then they go back down and figure some things out. And then they get back up and they have some success, and then the league adjusts to them and figures out how to get them out, and they have to adjust back. I will, you know, never quit on tools like Addison Barger has or like Jonathan Class A has, because from Class A, like, we've seen 99th percentile bat speed, and we've seen like 98th percentile speed, and we've seen a 108 max exit velocity. Like, these are exceptional abilities that few ball players have. So when you have those tools, if you can just layer in the feel and the experience and the clock and the awareness situationally that other players have more of right now because they've just played more high level baseball. If he can gain in some of those areas, he can make more of those tools and he can become a Corbin Carroll light. You know, like, this is a guy who spent like, what, 3.5 years in the minors before he was in the majors with Seattle, like, rushed to the majors because Seattle had all kinds of injury issues in their outfield. On a like proper development track, he probably hasn't even made his big league debut yet. You know, he's 23 right now, probably like double A, maybe just scraping into triple A. But he made an early MLB debut and he's been around for a bit. So we kind of forget about how young he is and how he's still developing. But I just think that with the potential that's there, you keep giving him opportunities and you keep helping him get better. And, you know, you hope that he puts it all together and ultimately has like a Barger-esque breakout like we're seeing from Addison this year.
Yeah, it's imaginable. And, you know, to see Class A, Barger, Alan Roden, you know, hasn't performed at the major league level yet, but still an intriguing option. This is good from a position player standpoint. To state the obvious, this is a good thing. And then you have Vladdy, which, you know, locked up for long term. You don't have to worry about him, you know, testing free agency with the Yankees and the Mets anymore. So your position player core is starting to look pretty solid. And more to the point, right now, they're getting results. But wanted to put that, you said 86 miles an hour for that swing last night for Class A. So I just wanted to put that in context for people. Like, correct me if I'm wrong, the hardest swings that you'll ever see in Major League Baseball are like 88, correct?
It's correct. That's, to me, that's like Schwarber, Soto, like that level.
Yeah. So the hardest swings you're ever going to see are 88. Class A is swinging 86, which is way above his average. So, you know, hey, you're down one in the ninth, try to hit a homer. That's actually a good idea. We like that approach. So that's pretty impressive for Class A. Before we step aside and circle back on the pitching here, Arden, are there any other position players that you want to touch on, highlight, give credit to while we're discussing them?
I mean, I don't think we can say enough about George Springer. Like, it's easy to forget that Jonathan Class A is 23, and it's easy to forget that George Springer is turning 36, and just the gains that he has made in terms of how hard he's hitting the ball.
And a high fly ball to deep left. Did he get enough? He did! His second home run in as many games, and the Blue Jays are back on top.
You know, Kirk was third in MLB in terms of like increase in hard hit rate from 2024 to 2025. George Springer is fourth. And to do that at 35 on the precipice of 36 is rather exceptional. Like, let me know how many 35, 36 year old guys there are across baseball who are making massive gains in hard hit rate. Like, let me know how many 35, 36 year old guys there are in baseball who have a 143 WRC plus. You know, and who are like OPSing well over 800, like 857 for Springer. How many mid-30s guys are doing that in MLB? You know, it wasn't that long ago coming out of spring training where, having seen the way he looked in spring, a lot of people were saying justifiably, George Springer looks cooked and he looks like a real issue for the Blue Jays. And how are they going to manage this because of his stature on the team, because of how much he makes, just because of his stature in the game? Like, how are they going to manage the ego there? How are they going to manage the playing time? Like, how are they going to not let this become a distraction? Well, George Springer like answered all those questions by going out and, you know, slugging 10 home runs through his first 62 games. It's incredible what he's done. this year. I think he's really found a good camaraderie with David Popkins. He speaks very highly of Popkins. And, you know, you listen to David Popkins and he talks about having different clubs in your golf bag for different situations in a game. Well, David Popkins with George Springer, early in a count, first pitch, second pitch, he wants George Springer taking out his driver and bombs away. Just a swing and taking an educated guess. Like, having done his homework, having seen what that pitcher throws, their tendencies, what they like to throw first pitch or in certain counts against hitters like Springer, what they've done to Springer in the past, and taking an educated guess, hunting for a specific pitch or a specific location or even both, and just selling out on that pitch. And that's why George Springer's whiff rate and strikeout rates are through the roof. But that's also why his OPS is nearly 860, because for all the times that he's going to swing and miss taking those shots early in plate appearances and like drop to a knee and look foolish, there's going to be the times where he guesses right and he hits, you know, he takes Gunnar Hoglund dead center twice on the first pitch in the same ball game, one on a fastball, one on a slider. What does that tell you? He was sitting on those two pitches to be able to hit those two pitches at different speeds, both out dead center, first pitch of two different plate appearances. Those were educated guesses that went right for George Springer. So I just think that David Popkins has gotten him such a good approach, and it's remarkable the things he's doing at his age.
Yeah, he's really producing. He's also running the bases really well, with the exception of a couple little hops at third base one time, which were pretty ill-advised. But, you know, he's overall in the season, he's been a really, really good base runner for this team. You know, it's funny too, because he's been taking his shots and he's been trying to get that A swing off, but the strikeout rate actually isn't that high. It's 22.8%, league average 22.2%. So even as he's taking more shots, he's not actually striking out that much. His walk rate is up. All the numbers look really good offensively for George Springer. So he is a really important part of this team, especially at a time that you have two other outfielders injured right now in Santander and Varsho. It's kind of wild the extent to which the Blue Jays have been able to backfill successfully for those two guys, where you have Straw stepping in, you have Nathan Lucas stepping up, you have Class A, as we talked about. So Springer, a huge part of that, and just a huge part of this team.
Yeah, no doubt. I got nothing else to add. He has been a carrying piece for this team at a time when Vladimir Guerrero Jr. hasn't been the carrying piece that we expected him to be. No, you know, I still think there is a epic hot streak in it, you know, coming for him, where for like 6 weeks he's the hottest hitter on the planet and he's just going nuclear. But, you know, to this point, for Vlad to be sitting on 8 home runs here, 66 games into his season, like on pace for 20, the Blue Jays were carrying a bit more, or were expecting, excuse me, a bit more carrying production from Vlad. I think it's still to come, but they haven't had it to this point, and George Springer has done his bit, and Alejandro Kirk has really done his bit to make up for what they haven't gotten from Vlad when it comes to slugging.
Offensive depth. It is a luxury that the Blue Jays are very happy to have, and not a luxury that they have on the pitching side, where some questions persist, particularly in the 4 and 5 rotation spots. So we'll take a break and we'll come back to discuss that on At the Letters. All right, we're back on At the Letters to discuss the Blue Jays pitching staff. And look, they've been holding it together for the most part, but there are some huge questions here, Arden. So we're going to dive in. Bowden Francis, number 5 rotation spot, Spencer Turnbull, Eric Lauer. Then you've got Adam Mako bubbling up in the minor leagues. You got Max Scherzer rehabbing. You got Treya Savage at AA. We're going to paint a full picture of all these pieces here in the course of the next 20-ish minutes. So let's start with Bowden Francis. We all know that he struggled. We all know that the results have been very disappointing. The path forward is where it gets interesting. What do you think about the path forward for the Blue Jays and Bowden Francis here?
Well, you can play back the episode like 2 weeks ago where I said the Blue Jays need to start having discussions about Bowden Francis' spot in the Blue Jays rotation. And I still think that. Like, I still think that there is absolutely justification to take him out of the rotation. And that could mean a demotion to the minor leagues, or that could mean putting him into a bulk role in the bullpen. I just don't think that the alternatives are there right now. I don't think that throwing 2 bullpen days a week, I mean, throwing 1 a week is hardly sustainable. Throwing 2 a week, I think, puts too much of a toll on your bullpen, too much pressure on your other starters to get deep into their starts. I think that's how you get relievers hurt. I think that's how you get some of your other veteran starters hurt. I don't think that would be the best thing for the Toronto Blue Jays. And so until some legitimate alternatives who can give you quality length as a starter emerge, I think that trying to get five and dive from Bowden Francis, which is something that we've seen from him, trying to get that is the best path forward. Because look, like, okay, you can make it a bullpen day or you can have it turn into a bullpen day. Either way, it's a bullpen day. So you might as well start Francis and see if you get those five innings.
Well, I see you can frame it a couple different ways there. I think so. I just want to start by acknowledging big picture, Bowden Francis, who was really, really good last year. And so he can be good at the major league level. And I think he will be good again at the major league level. So I'm not trying to say that he's cooked. I'm not trying to say it's time to DFA Bowden Francis. None of that. Just want to be clear with that off the top. However, we're talking about how to just piece things together to make the Toronto Blue Jays win the most baseball games. And in my opinion, the answer to winning the most baseball games does not include starting Bowden Francis against Bryce Harper, Trey Turner, Nick Castellanos, Alec Bohm, Kyle Schwarber, and the Philadelphia Phillies, who the last time that they saw him, hit him for seven runs in an inning and two thirds. It, to me, doesn't make a lot of sense. These guys can game plan for him. They have seen him really well. Bowden Francis not pitching very well at this moment in time. So I would put him into a relief role or behind an opener. You know, you could have someone like Mason Fluharty come in against the top of the Phillies order, your lefties like Schwarber and Bryce Harper. Fluharty sees those guys the first time through. You can still use Bowden Francis. You can still use him against those bats, but maybe behind an opener, maybe he's long relief. I think it's time to get creative. I just don't think it's time to hand him over to the Phillies. Maybe you skip his spot too. There are a couple off days that could allow the Blue Jays to do that. So whether it's skipping a spot, putting him behind an opener, or putting him into a bullpen role, I think those are some options that deserve a lot of consideration. And personally, I don't know that it's time to just hand him over to the Phillies again.
So in September of 2024, Bowden Francis threw a quality start against the Phillies. And in his five starts prior to the Phillies game earlier this month, which did not go well, and granted, this is extremely damning with faint praise, but in the five starts prior, he went at least four innings, never had fewer than four. So to me, like, you can put an opener ahead of him, sure, but he's still going to be facing the Phillies. Like, he's still going to be taking more than a trip through. So Bryce Harper, Schwarber, Turner,
they'd see him
all
at least
these guys.
Once. Probably once.
Castellanos, they're all still seeing him, right? To me, I think the most beneficial thing for him, the thing that sets him up best for success, would be to allow him to stay in his routine, to allow him to continue as a true starter instead of putting an opener in front of him, which would just undermine his confidence, which we can only assume has already been shaken through this process. And I think you do that based on the fact that more often than not, over the last eight starts, and you can push it back to the one against the Phillies late last year, he has gotten deeper into games than he did against the Phillies earlier this month. So that, if you kind of open up the window, like, that one against the Phillies earlier this month looks like the outlier. I'm not trying to say he's been good.
His season ERA is 6.12, right? His season home run total is highest in the majors. I'm not calling the Phillies game an outlier.
Play back the tape from 2 weeks ago when I said that they should take him out of the rotation and you said he should stay.
No,
play
I
back
agree.
That
and
tape.
No, 100%.
I was there and I'm still there.
So you would take him out?
Like I said, like, off the top of this, I think there's justification to take him out. Yeah, I think there isn't a better alternative.
Right. And this is where it gets to be a really challenging discussion for the Blue Jays. And an interesting one is they don't have a good alternative to this right now. So this is where they're choosing from alternatives that are not ideal. And personally, I think that mixing and matching, while not sustainable, and no one would say that running two bullpen games every five turns is sustainable, I think it's better than handing him over to the Phillies the way he's pitching, the way his location is looking, the way he's missing bats or not missing bats right now, how susceptible he is to the home run. I don't think that that's the best option. And, you know, yeah, it would undermine his confidence potentially, but I do think, you know, we can give him some credit for his ability to adjust and adapt and be a professional. And I think that he would adjust and adapt and be a professional. And I think also this isn't a development year. This isn't a year where the Blue Jays are trying to turn him into something for the future. They need to win games now. So if his development gets undermined a little bit in the process, I'm okay with that.
I just don't think that putting an opener in front of Francis right now gives you a better chance of winning than just letting Francis have the start. If it would be one thing if the opener was like a devastating righty who is going to just like take it right to Turner and Schwarber and, you know, Bohm and Castellanos and however they line it up. Like, and Harper's on the IL now, so it would I think it would be a righty at the top.
You still have Stott and Schwarber. It could be either way.
Yeah, Trey Turner has led off three of the last four, and then the other one he hit second, right? Like, you know, Stott has led off one of the last four that they've played. So to me, I think they're probably lining up Turner, Schwarber, Bohm, Castellanos.
So you even if Stott isn't there.
So Braden Fisher is the guy that you like. Sure. You think that gives you a better chance of winning than just letting Bowden Francis have a true start. Because it's not like you're putting Yoan Duran in there. Like, remember the concept of the opener wasn't just to put anybody ahead of the bulk guy. It was to put a really good reliever into the first inning and to treat the first inning like the ninth, because there's just as much leverage in the first as the ninth. So it was play a matchup game in the first. Braden Fisher is a guy who's been in the big leagues for like 4 weeks. And
well, let me tell you his numbers.
Credit to him. Oh, I don't doubt his small sample reliever numbers. They're there. I'm the one guy who was talking to him in spring. I believe in him.
For anyone who hasn't followed his numbers, he has a 3.29 ERA. He's pitched 13 and two-thirds. He's got two walks allowed and 18 strikeouts. Like, I like the 9-1 strikeout to walk ratio. And look, if Bowden Francis had a 9-1 strikeout to walk ratio, I would be saying send him out there against the Phillies and let him roll five. But that's just not the reality.
So how'd it go when Braden Fisher opened against the Athletics? An inning and a third, five runs, two homers.
Look, Arden, I'm not saying there's no possibility it goes wrong. I'm not saying it's a guaranteed W. In fact, these games are the ones that the Blue Jays are the most likely to lose. But I'm trying to turn a 40% win probability into a 44. You know, you're just trying to get the most out of these guys that you can. And to me, I think this would be an option to consider. Among others, I'm not saying this is the only option, but I think that someone like a Braden Fisher, that's an option worth considering.
But I think you have the 40 and the 44 reversed. Like, I think that the Fisher option is the 40 and the Bowden Francis is the 44.
Sure. I mean, that's fair. I'm just sharing my opinion.
As am I.
So either way, I mean, this is not an ideal situation that the Blue Jays are running into. And I think that, you know, you're looking at trying to do that while simultaneously juggling a bullpen game on the other rotation spot where you have Spencer Turnbull, whose velocity was 89.7 miles per hour in his most recent AAA start, and Eric Lauer, who has been good, but, you know, there's still a certain amount of uncertainty there. So, you know, as much as we talk about the Bowden Francis spot and what to do with that one, there's still another spot in this rotation that still has a fair amount of uncertainty.
Yeah, the alternatives are not great. That's why I think Francis has to stay, and you keep that one bullpen day until Max Scherzer's ready to go. And I think if Max Scherzer pitches well in Buffalo on Friday, I'm bringing him straight back to the majors. I'm not messing around with another rehab outing after that. I'm already paying the 40-year-old $15.5 million, and I've gotten three innings on that. So I'm not having him throw in a second rehab outing at Buffalo. I'm just bringing him straight back to the majors because he's Max freaking Scherzer, and he's going to the Hall of Fame. You know, I think the other thing to consider here is what a demotion of Bowden Francis would do in your clubhouse. And I think, you know, Shai and I had a conversation with Chris Bassett in Minneapolis where we were on the weekend, and he was adamant that like Bowden Francis needs to stay in the rotation and that the best thing for him is to continue making starts at the big leagues, because the gap between the big leagues and AAA has never been bigger. And Chris's point was that if you send him down to AAA, he no longer has access to Pete Walker. He's no longer facing the hitters that he needs to face. He's no longer figuring out how to adjust back to the adjustments that have been made to him. I think the really promising thing about his last start was that he was like actually working fastballs inside, and he was actually throwing more sliders. And I think if you go back, I mean, yes, he wasn't like throwing strikes, but he wasn't throwing massive, like he wasn't missing wildly. Like, he had some very close pitches on the edges. Like, I think Bowden Francis is close to turning this thing around. And I know Chris Bassett thought he was close to turning this thing around. He just thought that Bowden's going through a learning curve at the big league level right now. His point was that moving Francis to the bullpen or moving him to AAA would actually be doing him a disservice in getting out of this.
And I think it would if we're looking at this through the lens of Bowden Francis and his development and what's good for Bowden Francis, of course. And I understand that, you know, Chris Bassett has his opinions, but he's not the manager of this team. He's not the GM of this team. And I think that as much as he's a leader on this team, it's like John Schneider says when he takes Chris Bassett or Kevin Gausman or Jose Berríos out of the game a little bit earlier than those guys would want. You might hate me for the next 15 minutes, but end of the day, what Schneider's doing is he's trying to win games. And I see this similarly, where Bowden Francis wouldn't like it. Chris Bassett and Kevin Gausman probably wouldn't like it either, but it's in the service of trying to win ball games. And we all see the numbers. And it's not to write off what Bowden Francis can do or who he can be as a major league pitcher, but at this moment in time, it's just not working. And so, you know, I saw Buck Martinez's comments on this, and Buck was saying that he wouldn't have Bowden Francis make another start. I tend to agree. I just think that a change in role, a change in approach for that rotation spot would help. And yeah, you're going to have some questions about how do you backfill those innings, but frankly, that's already been the case for that rotation spot just because Francis has not been able to give them length.
If Max Scherzer was available for Francis's next turn, I would absolutely have Max Scherzer make that start instead, but he's not. Yeah. If Adam Macko was coming off of 2 months at AAA where he had been like perfectly serviceable and had been getting like a good base under him and was kind of on a high and pitching well and like had a nice entry point to the big leagues, I would call up Adam Macko and I would have him make that start. You know, I'd say the same of like an Adam Klopfenstein, you know, if Jake Bloss hadn't gotten hurt. But none of those options are realistic the next time Bowden Francis has to take a turn. And I think that a lot of what's gone right for the Blue Jays in terms of harmony in their clubhouse and in terms of buy-in from their players has been how the voices of the veterans have been considered. And this dates back to the offseason when there were just like a series of meetings and Zoom calls and phone calls between guys like Bassett, like Gausman, like Berríos, like Vladdy, like Bo, like George Springer, with John Schneider and Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro and Pete Walker and Carlos Fabelis and everyone about everything from like how long starters are going to go in games to positioning. Like when you see Chris Bassett out there ordering around infielders to go stand in other places, I mean, Mark Budzinski and Carlos Fabelis and, you know, analysts and researchers, data folks have worked really hard on that positioning, and Chris Bassett on the fly is going to tell those infielders to do something different because he's been given the license to, because that's something that was argued for by the veterans. So I do think that for all of these reasons, I'm giving Bowden Francis another go. You know, if he gets blown up, it's a bullpen day either way. So to me, the outcome is the same either way.
Well, unless you have an opener who gets the game started in a good direction and then, you know, you use Francis and hope for the best after that, or you skip him, you know, you could skip him because they do have a couple off days. So those would be the options that I would consider. Now we know that you would start Bowden Francis. We'll see which way the Blue Jays go. It sounds as though, based on what John Schneider has said, that the Blue Jays intend, as of now, he said, for Bowden Francis to make that start. So it sounds like there is more support on your side of things than from the way that I'm looking at it. But we'll see which way they go. And if that thinking changes in the course of the next few days. But yeah, you touched on Scherzer earlier, and I do want to address his progression. I actually kind of agree with you that if the start on Friday goes pretty well, where he's slated to go 60-65 pitches, I'd be very open to promoting him at that point. The Jays, again, to your earlier point, they do listen to their veterans, and so you're not going to rush Scherzer if he says he needs another start. I mean, you know, you probably want to take that into account, but if he's willing to go and ready to go 80 pitches, that could probably get you through five innings. So as long as that thumb is responding well, I have an openness to bringing him back following his AAA rehab start this Friday.
Yeah, everything that I said prior, I would be bringing him right back. That's what I'm paying him for. That's what he wants to do. I doubt he wants to make another rehab, appearance. I'm sure everyone wants to do it on the Blue Jays side just to be absolutely safe and certain and just not put themselves in a situation where the thumb flares up in the third inning again and they're forced back into their bullpen. But if everything goes well on Friday in Buffalo, I'm bringing him straight back.
Adam Macko was good at AAA Buffalo over the weekend. And he's getting close to being an option, according to John Schneider. Sounds like the Blue Jays want him to have a couple more starts. I mean, he's just coming back from a meniscus repair, so you don't want to rush him. He also has limited experience at AAA, full stop. So this is someone who could be an option within a couple weeks. But my read on things with Macko is that he would need at least probably a couple more starts. If that goes well, then maybe he becomes an option for one of those spots.
Yeah, that's just too soon. He's made one start at AAA this year, and he made one start at AAA last year. So you hope that things keep going well for him. He's had control and command issues throughout his minor league career, so you want to see him throwing strikes, and you want to see him consistently in the zone. He did walk three over his four innings in his AAA start the other day. Obviously, he found a way to work around that and to not allow damage, but I think that you want to see the consistency in command and location before you're bringing him up, because big league hitters, if they know that you aren't able to consistently locate a pitch, they're going to eliminate that pitch and they're going to sit on your other pitch. And when they get it, they're going to demolish it, because big league hitters are really, really good and they make adjustments really quickly. It's something Bowden Francis has learned the hard way this year.
True. All right. So two more pitchers to touch on before we step aside here and prepare further for tonight's Cardinals-Jays game. Spencer Turnbull, who was just added to the roster on Monday, and Treya Savage, who was promoted to AA New Hampshire less than a year after being drafted. But let's start with Turnbull. Spoke to him yesterday in St. Louis, and he was saying that he made some mechanical adjustments. We had heard that from the Blue Jays. He told us that the mechanical adjustments included trying to make sure he wasn't flying open too much, trying to make sure that he was getting power from his legs so it wasn't all arm in his delivery. But he said he's feeling good mentally, physically, sounded really happy to be in the major leagues. And he said also that he had had some adjustment period as he was getting used to the balls in the minor leagues, which they have a different minor league ball in the lower levels. The AAA ball is also slightly different than the major league ball. So he was saying that that contributed to some of the, slow start, some of the issues kind of ramping up. And now that he's back in the major leagues, he's got the good balls. He's got the major league issued Rob Manfred stamped baseballs. That's where he wants to be. So I'll admit, seeing 89.7 on the radar gun for the last start, my level of, I guess, optimism or confidence around Spencer Turnbull is pretty mitigated right now, but I have an open mind. We'll see where this one goes.
Let's see how it looks on Wednesday, because we saw how it looked at AAA and it didn't look good from the results perspective, from a stuff perspective, from velo perspective, particularly in Dunedin, things really didn't look good. So let's just see how it looks at the big league level now that he's here. The Blue Jays were really kind of forced into calling him up, just to be honest with you, because he just came to the end of that 35-day clause that was negotiated with the Blue Jays on which he could be optionally assigned. And I'm sure the Blue Jays explored a way to extend that with his agent, Scott Boris, and clearly they did not arrive at an extension of that optional assignment. Spencer Turnbull is here. So I think if the Blue Jays didn't have to recall him now, they likely would have had him continue pitching in the minors until he showed better stuff and effectiveness. But ultimately, they're in a position where they had to recall him, and they did. And he's going to pitch in a major league game on Wednesday, either in front of or behind Eric Lauer. And we're all going to be very interested to see what the radar gun is saying, how the stuff is performing, and just how competitive he is against a Cardinals lineup.
That's right. Now, finally, Treya Savage has absolutely dominated in low A, in high A, Vancouver. One start in Vancouver, four starts with Vancouver. And then he got the promotion, as first reported by our colleague Shai Davidi, to Double A, New Hampshire. So There are still steps remaining here. He still has to go to New Hampshire and succeed there. And then he would have to go to AAA, presumably. Well, maybe wouldn't have to, but probably would go to AAA and have to succeed there. And these hitters are better, and he's facing, you know, an increase in workload with each passing start. So there are challenges to this that remain. This is not just a slam dunk sort of situation, but man, this is about as good as it could have gone for Treya Savage in the 11 months since the Toronto Blue Jays have drafted him.
Undoubtedly. And I'm not surprised, because just when he was drafted, I mean, his stuff was described to me as big league ready now. I don't think the Blue Jays see a lot of work to be done on just the pure stuff that he has. And I bet you if you brought him to the big leagues now, he'd be able to get big league hitters out, because that's just like the quality of arm that he is. Development doesn't really work that way, and the Blue Jays don't do things that way. I think it would be doing him a disservice and like the long-term success of this franchise a disservice by rushing him to the big leagues right now. So congratulations to him for getting to Double A, where honestly he could have started this year at Double A and made his last 11 starts there, and I don't think anyone would have batted an eye, but he's there now. I'm sure that Cal Steven will follow behind relatively soon, Gage Stanifer perhaps later this year. And I think that Treya Savage finishes the year in the minors, whether it's at Double A or at Triple A for like one start at the end of the year. And then he comes into big league camp next year, and we all write about how impressive he is and how good he looks against big leaguers in spring training games. And in every radio interview that we do, you and I get asked about whether or not he's going to break camp with the team. And we have to pour, you know, cold water on everybody's fun and pump the brakes. Well, but
maybe maybe not.
If everything goes well and according to plan, likely you see him in the big leagues at this time next year, if not a little bit sooner.
Yeah, I think for 2026, pretty good chance. He has the chance to make 15, 20 starts in the major leagues and has the upside to be a number three, a number two starter, maybe more. So this is a really good prospect, someone who's excelling in the minor leagues. Now, this season, I see a crack of possibility where he could be in the major leagues, and that would include exceptional performance continued in the upper minors. It would include health and him doing the little things behind the scenes that the Blue Jays look for with all their top prospects. And it would probably include a need at the major league level at some point in August or September. But I don't want to sit here and say like, oh, it's going to happen or that's likely, or because it's probably objectively unlikely. But I see that as a possibility for later this season if everything breaks well.
I think he'll hit an innings cap before that happens. He's already at 50 and two thirds. His high in college was 93 last season. So they're not going to want him going beyond like 120 this year. I understand that innings is a very imperfect measure of workload, but considering how many stops he's going to make in the minors this year, how much upheaval he'll have, how much has been thrown at him in just his first year as a professional. I know you talked to him in spring, and I did as well, and just heard about what an adjustment it's been for him going from even like a really good college program at Eastern Carolina to a more professional environment, and to no longer being a student athlete, but to being like a professional baseball player and having baseball be your job every single day for 8, 9, 10, 11 hours. I just don't think the Blue Jays would put that much stress and expectation on him to bring him up into a really charged, pressurized environment late in the season where the games really, really matter and he's trying to get outs. So they're really, really important. By that point, anyways, I think that if he continues averaging five innings per start, as he has been to this point, I mean, he throws 10 more starts between Double A and maybe Triple A. Now he's at 100 innings already, and we're in like, you know, the middle of August, right? Like he made 11 starts through early June. So they'd really have to pump the brakes on how much he's been pitching to this point if they're looking to get him some innings at the big leagues later this year. I think it's an extremely low likelihood. I would put 99% chance he is not in the big leagues this year.
Yeah, maybe there's a way to just have some three-inning starts mixed in. You see that with prospects a lot of the time. We've seen some four-inning starts from Yesavage, so that's a way to make sure that the innings and the pitches and the workload is not getting too out of control. But yeah, it's a huge adjustment. I mean, this time last year, you might have been, you know, studying for sociology 301, and now it's like, okay, like we're talking about a possible, hey, you're facing Junior Caminero or Aaron Judge. Like, it's a big leap in a short period of time to even contemplate. I think it's maybe on the table, but we'll see. Anything else to add, Arden, on the pitching side before we step away?
Just because I'm not an absolutist, I'm at like 1% chance he's in the big leagues later this year. Like, what percentage would you put on it? Just so people get like a true sense of like the likelihood that you are, the picture that you're painting here and how likely or unlikely it is to develop.
15%.
Wow. 20.
15 or
20. Wow.
Yeah.
That's high.
Like, if you roll a 6-sided die, one of them has Yesavage on the side.
Oof, yeah, to me, that's too high. I think that, like, Lazaro Estrada has a better chance of impacting this team in September if they really need it. You know?
I mean, hey, at a certain point, it's win time, right? At a certain point. So we'll see.
Yeah, I would be extremely surprised, even shocked, if Trey Savage was in the big leagues this year.
Yeah, there are a lot of considerations. 40-man clock, the option clock, I should say, the 40-man roster space. There's a lot that goes into this stuff, the development first and foremost. But hey, you got to win games. So I don't think it's zero. I don't think it's one. I think it's a little higher than that. But that will be the subject of another At the Letters, probably many more At the Letters, where we will discuss Trey Savage and the future of the Toronto Blue Jays. But in the meantime, thank you so much for listening to At the Letters, for subscribing, for leaving us reviews and ratings, and following us on Sportsnet and at sportsnet.ca, where you can find Arden Swelling's work, where you can find my work. And that's it. We will talk to you soon. Thanks to Christian Ryan for producing, and thank you for listening to At the Letters.